Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
With the fifth pick in the 2019 NFL Draft, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers select Devin White, linebacker, LSU.
Good morning, Acadiana. Welcome to a Friday edition of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parch III. Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos as always, and we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also being simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. You can give us a call today if you'd like. On the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. We have a jam-packed show. And when I say jam-packed, I mean jam-packed show for you today here on RP3 and Company. Third hour, we'll have Tyler Nunez, as always, our regular scheduled Friday guest. He covers LSU for Tiger Rag. He's going to give us his thoughts on Devin White being selected with the fifth overall pick in the NFL draft. He's also going to tell us where he thinks Greedy Williams may fall to today, either the second or third round. I'd anticipate in the first, like, six picks of the second round. He also give us an update on the Will Wade contract situation. We'll get his thoughts on that. We also have a very special interview lined up in the third hour as well with Nish Hall of Famer and a 10-year veteran in the National Football League, a second-round draft pick of the New York Jets back in 1983. Johnny Hector is going to be joining us there in the third hour. You're not going to want to miss that. We also got our boy Barry Hurstis will join us in the second hour, give us his thoughts about the Saints staying pat, not trading up into the first round when there started being some activity there in the late first round, late last night. The Saints avoided that. Will there be any trade activity tonight for the second and third round? We'll get Barry's thoughts on that. We'll also have Eric Narcisse to start off the second hour from the Daily Advertiser. He's in Sulphur. State softball tournament is this weekend. Several teams from Acadiana are there with a chance to bring home some hardware. We'll get Eric's thoughts on that. And we'll also have an interview with LSU running back Nick Brissett, who's trying to get drafted this weekend as well, and keep up the tradition, the history of Tiger running backs being drafted into the NFL. Plus my rant of the week and RPOs with RP3. Like I said, jam-packed. But let's start off with last night's NFL draft. Now, I will go ahead and pat myself on the back. I did correctly pick the first three picks of the draft. It's kind of ho-hum. Kyler Murray, number one overall, to the Arizona Cardinals. Once again, I have questions. You have a quarterback on your roster that you took in the top 10 last year. Now you have one that you just took in the number one overall spot. I'm not convinced either can lead a team. But the Arizona Cardinals are like, hey, man, we need another young quarterback. Now, will they trade Josh Rosen? We'll see. That could happen today or this weekend. But reports were coming out last night that a few of the teams that were expressing interest in trading for Josh Rosen They drafted quarterbacks. So, do they really
congratulations.
Need
congratulations. You played yourself.
Congratulations. You played yourself. I just wonder what they're going to do. That's the curious thing to me for the Cardinals is that they don't seem to have a whole lot of direction. There's been rumors of them getting rid of Patrick Peterson as well. So what's really going on there? I just really don't know what's going on with the Arizona Cardinals. But as expected, they took their man that they wanted. Number one overall, Kyler Murray. San Francisco 49ers wasted no time. They took the pass rusher out of Ohio State, Nick Bosa, younger brother of Joey Bosa, with the number two overall pick. Number three was Quinnen Williams, defensive lineman, in particular a defensive tackle out of the University of Alabama. He went number three overall to the Jets. And then came the Raiders. And the initial reaction of the Raiders' first pick last night was, well, it looks like the Raiders are drunk. They took Farrell, the defensive end, out of Clemson. He's a good player, a very good player. All three, Clemson had not one, not two, but three defensive linemen selected in the first round last night.
I think we both had all three of them going in the first round as well.
Correct. None of us had Farrell going that high, though.
No, I had him going 13 overall. I believe Kuiper's final mock draft had Farrell going last to the Patriots. So something happened. Or it was just the Raiders.
Is this cat the fourth best overall player in this year's draft?
Well, John Gruden thinks so, because this guy, John Gruden here, is going to get his guys coached up, and he'll be the best player in the league.
Thanks, Chucky. Just like you were coaching up all those guys the last 4 years in Tampa. Because that's why you're not the coach there anymore. Good player. I love the Raiders' two picks after that. Their two later picks are the ones that I love more than anything. Those are the guys that I really like when they later selected. And we actually projected this yesterday on the show. They took Josh Jacobs, the running back with the great story out of Alabama, at number 24.
That was well done by you. I didn't see that coming at all.
And then they took Abram, the safety out of Mississippi State, at 27. So they got two really good value picks there at the end of the round. I just don't know if you take Farrell at number four. I don't know. But then came the fifth pick.
Can I request a half a point for getting the Raiders taking Jonathan Abram at 24 and not 27?
And I think I had Jacobs going at 27.
Right. Well, you know, yeah, I didn't have Jacobs anywhere in my first round, but I had Abram in the wrong slot for the Raiders. I didn't get a half a point. Yay!
By all means, sir.
Moral victories.
Then came Tampa. They took, as expected, Devin White. That had been rumored and talked about for a long time. And this is what Devin White had to say, because, once again, Tampa Bay has new leadership down there. They have Bruce Arians, one of the best offensive minds in the game, but he also has a love and appreciation for defense. He's also one of the biggest characters in the NFL. He's the new head coach. He's the new man in charge down there in Tampa Bay. He's been tasked to turn things around. And this is what Devin White said stood out to him about his new head coach.
I'm going to tell you, the thing that I loved about Coach Bruce was not football related. You know, the Glazer family, he told me how they like foundations for kids, and they let him and his wife, you know, they helped them with a foundation as far as, you know, kids that was in foster homes, get them into, you know, homes with, you know, great people. And I'm all about the kids, man. I respect that. And man, when we was in there talking, like, I didn't get emotional, but it really touched my heart because I love the kids. Like, you know, LSU, I used to go out to the schools in Baton Rouge because I know they was underprivileged, and I used to speak to them and tell them you can make a way and it don't have to be with sports. Because, you know, me, I was a great academic student. My mom wasn't playing that. You know, I had a great ACT score. I always had a great GPA. So that really stood out about Coach Bruce.
Look,
I love Devin White.
I'm not an LSU fan, but I kind of love Devin White.
I love Devin White.
So he goes to Tampa, and I know Saints fans are probably a little disappointed that, yes, once again, another former LSU star is going to be playing in the NFC South, but not for the New Orleans Saints. The NFC South in the last 10 years has been filled with LSU stars. They just don't play for the Saints.
You know, here's was my thoughts, because I knew at some point I was going to have to state my feelings on Devin White going to a rival team. It is Devin White being the fifth overall draft pick, standing up, representing LSU like that, is all the more reason to love Devin White. But him being drafted by the Bucs is just one more reason to hate Tampa Bay. So you don't have to hate. You can love Devin White for representing LSU, fifth overall draft pick, doing his thing, NFL. But it's still absolutely one good reason to hate Tampa Bay. So that's how I'm going to choose to look at it.
Highest drafted defensive players from LSU since 1967. You ready?
I mean, that's a long time ago.
Since 1967, courtesy of our friend of the program, Mike Dettelier, draft expert. Devin White, fifth overall, inside linebacker, Tampa Bay. Patrick Peterson, fifth overall, cornerback, Arizona. Glenn Dorsey, fifth overall, defensive tackle, Kansas City. Tyson Jackson went third overall to Kansas City.
Chiefs, really?
Defensive end.
I mean, he was a great player, don't get me wrong, but I don't remember him going that high.
In college.
Good for him.
In college.
Him and Glenn Dorsey linked back up in Kansas City. Didn't they at some point? I think. Or maybe it was Ricky Jean Francois, I'm thinking, played in Kansas City with Dorsey, maybe.
So, Devin White was selected highest drafted LSU linebacker in the common draft era. Highest drafted LSU linebacker in the common draft era. This is what he had to say about going to Tampa Bay and playing for the Bucs.
Hey, I kind of already knew it was going to be Tampa. It's a special place. You know, Coach Litch, he's a great guy. You know, Coach Bruce, he's a great guy. You know, Ty Boyles, he's a great guy. You know, just everybody, man, everybody. Coach Caldwell, he played for 11 years. I mean, it's the perfect fit. You know, I ran the same defense in college, and it's going to be an easy transition. You know, I just got to be ready to go work my butt off.
So congratulations to Devin White being drafted fifth overall. He's going to make a huge impact for the Tampa Bay Bucs and Saints fans, who the majority of Saints fans are diehard LSU fans. That's going to be tough seeing Devin White.
He goes the way of Kendall Beckwith.
Sacking Drew Brees or jacking up Alvin Kamara on the outside.
Kendall Beckwith, Debo Jones. Hold on, there's more. If we do this, Derry Beckwith.
There's so many more.
There's other guys. Duke, what was his last name?
Duke Riley.
Riley, yeah. A lot of guys just hanging out over there, not on the New Orleans Saints. But it's okay because the Saints, oh, no, wait, never mind.
Oh, they're making a move today.
Oh, you're spoiling RPOs, Raymond.
So Devin White goes fifth overall.
Yes. Oh, they're making a move today.
But the only LSU player taken. Selected. How? Why? Grady Williams? There wasn't a quarterback taken, much less one from LSU. We'll dive into that, and we'll dive into the Raiders and, in particular, the New York Giants acting like they were blacked out drunk last night while drafting. Here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also, saw my cast on KXKW channel 32.1. Give us a call on the Arco Equipment Hotline if you like, 337-706-0111. I'd like to hear your thoughts about last night's first round of the NFL draft. We spent the first segment talking about Devin White, former Bayou Bengal, selected number 5 overall by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Greedy Williams did not get his name called. In fact, for the majority of the first round, it appeared that NFL teams hated cornerbacks and wide receivers.
Well, you know they don't throw the ball in the NFL, right? It's all about ground and pound in the NFL these days. Who needs a receiver and a cornerback?
If you take the quarterback off Murray, right? Okay, so he goes number 1 overall.
All right.
Defensive lineman, linebacker. Another quarterback, linebacker. Tight end, and then it's defensive lineman, linebacker. Offensive lineman, defensive lineman, defensive lineman. Offensive lineman, quarterback, linebacker, defensive lineman, offensive lineman, defensive lineman, tight end. And then we finally get to pick 21, the first DBs taken off the board. It's Darnell Savage Jr., kid out of Maryland.
Great name.
Packers take him, the safety, and then it's back to offensive lineman. And then we get a running back in Jacobs with the Raiders took. Marquise Brown. I want to say I picked that for the Ravens, maybe. I'm not for sure. No, I picked an offensive lineman.
I had him going to the Raiders.
You had him going to the Ravens.
Raiders.
Okay, so Marquise Brown from Oklahoma. By the way, congratulations to my childhood team, the Washington Redskins, for seemingly not screwing it up yesterday. They waited until a quarterback fell to them. Surprisingly, it was Dwayne Haskins. He's probably the best prospect in this draft at the quarterback position. So they got their new franchise quarterback, and they got a great defensive lineman in Montez Sweat out of Mississippi State that they traded back into the first round late to get. But knowing my Redskins, I'm sure they'll screw those two players up, probably have devastating knee injuries or something.
Did you put that on me, Ricky Bobby?
Then Abram gets taken, the safety, another defensive lineman, this one out of TCU. Then the first cornerback's taken is the Giants, who traded back into the first round for their third pick. And they got the Baker kid, the corner out of Georgia. And then offensive tackle, and then the Patriots wrap it up with the Arizona State wide receiver, Harry. I'm surprised by that. I know the depth of front seven, linebackers, D tackles, and defensive ends was great this year. But how does Greedy Williams not get taken in the first round? That's surprising to me. So now, instead of going to a situation where he may not have to be the number one overall cornerback on the roster by being a late first-round pick, he's more than likely going to be an early second-round pick. And he's probably going to have to be thrown out there. And I'm surprised. There was some talk of him possibly not being drafted in the first round. People were knocking his inability to tackle or his lack of desire of tackling. But what I know is this. When I watch Greedy Williams play, he's a ball hawk. He doesn't let the wide receiver get separation on him. Isn't that what the NFL is all about now? Isn't it all about having defensive backs that can defend the ball? You don't need your cornerbacks to be good tacklers anymore. That's just not how the game is played. Hell, Deion Sanders was the best shutdown corner in NFL history. That guy avoided tackling like it was the plague. First ballot Hall of Famer, best cover corner in NFL history, Deion Sanders. He hated to tackle. If there's a chance to avoid a tackle on the football field, Deion Sanders would do so. So, Greedy Williams not being drafted? Somebody is going to get a hell of a cornerback, and Greedy will more than likely be extremely, extremely motivated. Adam Schefter tweeted this out. Players left on the board for rounds 2 to 3 Friday night will include Mississippi wide receivers DK Metcalf and AJ Brown. Missouri quarterback Drew Locke. Oklahoma All-American offensive lineman and Pineville native Cody Ford. Florida offensive tackle Juwan Taylor, who we both had going as a first rounder. So did most people. Cornerbacks Byron Murphy, Rakia Sin from Temple, and of course Greedy Williams. So a ton of impact players, guys that are going to possibly be Pro Bowlers, guys that are going to be possibly be All Pros, are going to be taken in the first 15 to 20 picks in the second round. I guess this is that's how deep this class truly is. Dwayne Haskins, the kid out of Ohio State, said, quote, afterwards, while rocking a Washington Redskins hat, "I'm more motivated than ever. There's a bigger chip on my shoulder. The league done messed up. I'm right down the street, so we're going to do it right this time." So it's crazy. So he's got a chip on his shoulder. The great part for the Redskins, once again, they didn't have to trade up to get their franchise quarterback. He fell to them at 15 overall. There's no telling how early Haskins will have to play. Alex Smith, will he ever play again? Not for sure. That injury was so gruesome, you just don't know. But Dukes Jones. Daniel Jones. A guy that I saw in the eyeball and went, eh. Or I turned to my friend who I attended the game with and went, that's the guy that everyone's talking about? You sure that's not the backup? Is what my response was. He was taken number 6 overall by the New York Giants. I wonder why the Giants took him. Oh, because he was coached by David Cutcliffe, who coached their current quarterback, Eli Manning. Guess what? Jones is not a Manning. Oh, the Giants. Drinking Thunderbird wine. Drafting people. Rant of the Week's coming up next right here on RP3 and Company.
Let me tell you something. You know what really grinds my gears?
Uh-oh. RP3 is ready to sound off.
Serenity now! Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
This is more than a complaint, but less than a tirade. This is Ray's Rant of the Week.
The fortunes of your favorite NFL franchise do not rest on what occurs in the first round. Never has, never will. Now, I know the four-letter network would like you to believe otherwise. Okay? The NFL would like you to believe otherwise as well. This is why the draft has left New York City and now it's a rotating site location. Chicago, Philly, Dallas, Nashville. Are there great players that are selected in the first round of the NFL draft? Yes. Are there guys who could become Pro Bowl players, all pros, that are selected in the first round of the NFL draft? Yes. Is that how you win Super Bowls? Nope. Is that how you compete for world championships? Hell no. Not how it works. We've talked about it all week. The first round's great. And when we talked it, whether it's either been Les East or anyone else or Connor O'Gara, it does not matter. The best teams in the NFL year in and year out, they build through the draft, but they get the guys in the second, third, fourth, fifth rounds. That's where you can, that's where you build up your roster. That's how you add valuable depth. That's how you add those guys who eventually become pro bowlers. That's how the Philadelphia Eagles have been able to build their franchise. That's how the New England Patriots have been able to build themselves. That's how the Saints are currently building themselves. You can add free agents. That's great. But the foundation of any good team, any competitive team in the NFL in the modern era, or hell, the last 40 years, has been building up through the draft, not only in the first round, but with second round picks, third round picks, fourth, fifth, sixth round picks. The Pittsburgh Steelers did that in the 70s. They built up after numerous years of the draft, just not first rounders. All those Hall of Famers that are for the Pittsburgh Steelers were not all first round picks. So as much as you may get excited about seeing your team pick a guy, he gets out of the green room, he hugs his mom, he hugs his agent, he walks up, he's wearing whatever the hell he's wearing, gets the jersey with his name across the back, gets on stage, shakes hands with Roger Goodell, they take a pose for a picture, he gets interviewed right off stage, that's great. Does not mean that your team's going to win the Super Bowl. Does not mean that that player is the missing piece. Hell, does not even mean that your team's going to be competitive in 2 to 3 years. Let me list off some players to you. Rodney Harrison, Harry Carson, Terrell Davis, Jared Allen, Shannon Sharp, Antonio Brown, Richard Dent, Richard Sherman, Kevin Green, Bart freaking Starr, Roger Staubach, Captain America himself. Big up to Avengers Endgame. Steve Largent, Johnny Unitas, and Deacon Jones. You want to know what all those players have in common? They're all like Tom Brady. They were not first-round draft picks, and they're some of the greatest players to ever play the game of professional football. Deacon Jones was drafted in the 14th round. They don't even have that many rounds anymore, guys.
You caught my ear for a second because I was like, he misspoke. Oh, no, wait, it was that long ago.
14 rounds. Johnny Unitas, 9th round selection. Yeah, Johnny Unitas, who's still considered today one of the top five greatest quarterbacks of all time, is still in the conversation at least. Roger Staubach, Captain America himself, the Dallas Cowboy, 10th round. Bart Starr, 17th round. Kevin Green, Richard Sherman, those guys were 5th rounders. Richard Dent was an 8th round pick. Antonio Brown, Mr. Big Chest himself, 6th round pick. Shannon Sharp, Hall of Famer, 7th round. Terrell Davis, 6th round. You see my point here? Hell, if you're a New Orleans Saints fan, you know this better than anyone. Your franchise quarterback, who's going to go down as one of the greatest of all time. True, he did not begin his career with you, but you remember he was a second-round draft pick? Your franchise's all-time leading wide receiver, Marcus Colston, 6th round. You see what I'm driving at here. We all fall in love with the first round of the NFL draft because it's sexy. These are the guys that are in the green room. These are guys that get invited to the draft, okay? We get to see their emotion. Is Devin White going to be an absolutely stud at the next level? Yes. But those guys are few and far between. A lot of these guys are just going to be okay, and there's going to be guys taken today in the second and third round that are going to be better than the cats that were selected last night in downtown Nashville. It happens every single year, year in and year out. Guys that are drafted in the second, third, fourth round, sometimes even later, outperform and outlast the guys that come in with all the hype, with the big signing bonus, and get to have their jersey on stage with the commissioner. Every year. Every year. Hell, look at the Washington Redskins. They take RG3. They gave up a king's ransom to get him. To trade up to number two. He wins Rookie of the Year, shreds his knee. He's never the same. He can never return to form. He's never the same player. That same draft, they took Kirk Cousins in the fourth round. And Kirk Cousins ended up being a Pro Bowler who signed a massive deal to sign with Minnesota last year. Fourth round pick. The money that the Redskins were forced to pay Kirk Cousins was far less. If you looked it up, I'd be willing to bet you that Kirk Cousins' first initial rookie contract was probably less than the signing bonus that they had to give RG3 the same year. The teams that compete for championships, just like the Saints have done. Yes, Marshawn Lattimore was a first-round draft pick. Michael Thomas was not. Okay. Sheldon Rankins wasn't. Cam Jordan was a late first-rounder. Alvin Kamara, third-rounder. Look at some of the best players on the Saints roster. How many of them are first-round draft picks? Not Drew Brees. Not Alvin Kamara. Not Michael Thomas. You see what I'm going at here? Not Sheldon Rankins. Just not how it is. There's only so many first-round picks. And if you bank the fortunes of your franchise on one guy, not everyone is going to be so bad and they're going to do trades like the Raiders and the Giants did where they compiled three first-round picks. Now, that's a smart move where they can build up and lay foundation pieces, but the likelihood is maybe one of those guys is going to pan out as a long-term answer. You build your team. The foundation of your team comes in the second, the third, the fourth round. This has been the blueprint for the New England Patriots. Bill Belichick is notorious for compiling draft picks and notorious for trading out of the first round because he actually values those second and third rounders more because the team doesn't have to pay them as much. A, it's a shrewd business move. Second, he can trade his first round pick to someone, get their second and third. Now, all of a sudden, instead of drafting one guy, he's now doubled that, sometimes tripled that. And he has foundation pieces for guys, multiple players, because the difference in talent level and ability from a guy who's drafted anywhere between, say, like 7 to 32 is not that much different than the guys that are drafted 33 to 50. It just really isn't. You have a few generational players in the draft every year. And then everyone else are really good players. And the difference between those players in the first round and those guys in the second round is slim. And the brightest minds in the NFL know this. And the brightest minds in the NFL, the ones that have the best run organizations, like the New Orleans Saints, like the Philadelphia Eagles, like the New England Patriots, they know this. So don't get distracted with all the hype of the draft, because your team does not win the Super Bowl based on the first year or the first round of the NFL draft. Just ask New England. Just ask the Saints. Just ask the Philadelphia Eagles. It's not won because of the first round. Coming up next, we'll close out the first hour of RP3 and Company with yours truly, Raymond Parsha III, and the Cody Shoots with RPOs. With RP3, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Blue poncho.
Shotgun formation. Cody snaps the questions.
Dre.
And RP3 makes the reads. This is RPOs with RP3.
Blue poncho.
final little spot here in the first hour of RP3 and Company on this Friday. We are live in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. And we're going to dive into RPOs. Last week, Raymond, we had a very quick edition, a lightning edition
yes.
of RPOs. Got a little more time to let it breathe today.
Oh, yeah.
Gonna let it aerate a little bit.
Absolutely.
But we're going to dive into the NFL draft for our first RPO. If you're ready, I want to know this from you. No Greedy Williams in the first round of the NFL draft. A little weird. No New Orleans Saints in the first round of the NFL draft. Might be a little weirder. I need this from you. RPO on the possibility of the Saints making a move.
Oh, I knew you were going there.
And moving up in the second round / bonus RPO. Also, on a small chance that maybe Greedy ends up in New Orleans.
I'll take your bonus one first.
Okay.
Pass. There's no way in hell, dude. I know as the LSU Saints fan, it's always a conflict.
Bonus RPO.
Okay, your bonus RPO. I swatted away. There's
yes,
no way.
Look,
they have Lattimore, who they're going to have to pay. Eli Apple as well, same
right.
draft class.
Right.
They like both of them a lot. They're locked up there. They got
didn't
depth.
They just signed P.J.
back.
Williams, too, or something
right,
like that.
And they brought back Patrick Robinson.
Yeah.
So
I had to ask, though.
They're good. Now, if they hadn't traded for Eli Apple last year, I'd say, yeah, all day long.
Right.
I'd say that'd be a home run. But since they didn't, no on
what
that.
What about that Saints part? Are they going to move up in the first round? Second round, excuse me.
Yes, I feel they're going to do something. They're either going to move up, or they're going to trade a player or do something to get more picks today. They are not going to only just have the one pick today. The New Orleans Saints will have at least one other pick in the rounds 2 and 3, or possibly 3. They'll make some type of move, either move a player or move a future second rounder or whatever they'll do. They'll compile a couple picks here. Mm-hmm. I would expect them at the end of tonight to have drafted either at least 2 players, possibly 3.
Wow, I like that, though. We'll move on now. A little LSU baseball talk for you because they are on the road at Alabama starting tonight. Now, I told you yesterday, same thing. I won't assume a sweep on the road in conference, okay?
Not with the news that came out yesterday.
But I will say this. LSU should win 2 out of 3 games this weekend. I will say that confidently. So let me ask you this. RPO on LSU getting off to a better start this weekend than they have recently, and not having to fight from behind the 8 ball and win the final 2 games of the series, LSU wins tonight.
Oh.
Because they have been starting, so they've been losing some Friday games, it seems like, and having to come back and win the final 2 of series, and I hate that.
I will take option here because it depends on what Zach Hess does. Because earlier in the week, unbeknownst to us, and due to the reporting yesterday, we find out that Zach Hess was going to be put to the bullpen. Maneri makes the decision and tells Zach, I'm moving you to the bullpen. So his dude, his Friday night starter, was going to be taken. And the freshman, who you love so much,
right,
was going to become the new Friday night starter.
Right.
Until a half hour later where they come and tell Paul, oh, Henry's arm, there's an issue, we need an x-ray.
How is that possible?
So due to arm soreness, which I've never heard about a team having this much problem with their arms.
Apparently it's contagious.
It's apparently the hepatitis of the baseball world for LSU. So then they have to turn back around and go, no, Zach, we need you to be the Friday night starter still.
My head's spinning if I'm Zach Hess.
Now, apparently Zach accepted both things graciously and was like, yes, I'm all about it, coach. Team player, great. But you got a guy that has not been able to handle consistently being the Friday night starter. You were going to put him into the bullpen. Now he has to go be the Friday night starter. And your freshman pitcher, your best pitcher on staff this year, by far,
yep,
he is now experiencing arm soreness. What the hell is going on with the LSU pitchers, first of all? This has been going on for like a year. Are they doing something wrong? Is there a training regimen? Is someone secretly poisoning them when their protein shakes? I don't know. An investigation is deserved.
I doubt it's that last one.
Yes, I doubt it's that last one too. But I don't know. It all depends on Zach Hess. Because they don't even know who their Sunday starter is going to be.
Right. It's good that it's against Alabama, but it's not good.
Say it right.
It's not,
say it right.
Alabama?
Alabama.
Sorry. It's all right. It's better that it's against the worst team in the league, but it's not good because it's baseball. You know, it's not just one game and then, you know, you wait a week and go, no, this repetitive series here. I don't know. I'm worried, but I'm confident still all the same.
They should sweep Alabama.
One more for you, Raymond. Hashtag don't spoil the end game. That is all over Twitter right now. It's really cool. If you hashtag don't spoil the end game, you get a little Avengers A emoji next to it and everything. So that is sweeping the country as Avengers Endgame is out right now nationwide. I am going tomorrow. I have I don't want to call it a stupid wedding, but I have a wedding to go to.
But you
tonight.
Just did call it.
No, I didn't. I said I don't want to call it that.
Hey, someone, we were seeing a text message here in about 2.5 minutes. Continue.
But there is a wedding for me to go to tonight. You told me that you aren't going until next weekend. Your reasons are fair enough. Avoid the crowds. It's not. I get it. You, though, would never expect to not have, let's say, the score to the LSU-Alabama football game. You would never expect to not have that spoiled for you if you waited a week to watch it. You are expecting to not be spoiled for Endgame, even though you're going to wait a week to watch it. Good luck, my friend, RPO, on you not getting spoiled by not watching Endgame this weekend.
I will pass because I don't care about spoilers. That doesn't ruin the movie experience for
me. Oh, okay, fair enough.
Second of all, let me go on a little bit of a rant here.
Okay.
Stop your whining about people spoiling stuff on social media. If you don't want to hear about people spoiling
I wasn't saying social media. If somebody is going to speak to you, it might be me next week.
Fine. No.
Where I may talk about it. That's what I mean.
But the pitch from the actors not to spoil it on social media, right? Don't spoil the end game.
I guess that is their pitch, yeah, because it's a hashtag. Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Last time I checked, and I could be wrong here, once again, I may not have the current information needed to make this statement. Last time I checked, no one is holding a submachine Uzi to your head.
The Fortnite.
And making you scroll through your Twitter or your Gram or your Book of Face anytime. So if you can't be an adult enough to step away from your social media accounts so you don't have people spoil whether it's the Avengers Endgame or Game of Thrones, then your life priorities are not right. For real. Like, just what? Please, can you shut up? You're basically asking people, can you shut up so I can continue talking? That's what you're asking people to do. It's the rudest thing I've heard in a long time.
Go to break. You're hot. You're hot right now. Go to break.
I'm more fired up about this than I was my rant. First hour's in the books. 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Well, Mr. Burns had done it. The power plant had won it. With Roger Clemens clucking all the while. Mike Socia's tragic illness made us smile. While Wade Boggs lay unconscious on the barroom tile. We're talking softball. From Maine to San Diego, talking softball. Mattingly and Canseco. Ken Griffey's grotesquely swollen jaw. Steve Sachs and his running with the law. We're talking Homer. Ozzie and the Straw. We're talking softball.
Welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, and we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. We spent the first hour talking heavy NFL draft, obviously. Devin White being selected number 5 overall by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We also talked about the rest of the head-scratching moments of the first round of the NFL draft. I had my rant of the week. And then we also had a special early edition of RPOs with RP3. But right now, it's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our first guest of the day. He covers high school athletics for the Daily Advertiser. He's right now gearing up for Sulphur. That's right, state championships in softball are going to be taking place there at Frash Park, and several teams from the Acadiana region are in the tournament looking to bring back some hardware. We're going to get his thoughts on who he thinks can do that. Give us a little bit of a preview. It's the one and only Eric Narcisse. Eric, how are you this morning, brother?
Hey, I'm doing good, Raymond, man. Appreciate you having me on.
First of all, let's get before we get started talking about the softball talk, man. First of all, congratulations on your latest addition to the family, and I hope everything's well with the baby and with the wife.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Both of them are doing well.
I'm glad to hear that, man. So let's get started, man. No rest for you, big man. the baby comes home, and I know that's a stressful and tiring time. But now you got state softball tournament. Several teams from Acadiana are in the mix. Usual suspects, St. Thomas More, but also some new faces that haven't been there in quite a long time, like Church Point. They're there as a kind of a Cinderella team. Also, LCA is there for the first time in its program history. So kind of give me the lay of the land here. Who are some teams that could that are the Cinderella teams from the region that are there? And do they have a legit chance of possibly bringing home some hardware?
Well, I tell you what, man. You mentioned Lafayette Christian. You mentioned Church Point. I've always been kind of a big fan of Mike Hardy. He definitely teaches offense. You know, he loves to swing for the fences. And I haven't had a chance to see this Church Point team, but I've heard a lot of great things about them. And I'm looking forward to being able to see them today. But Church Point, LCA. I think Bo Shane's a team that you definitely have to keep an eye on as far as a Cinderella team. You know, they're a name that's always constantly being thrown, you know, known to be in the playoffs and having great seasons. But this is their first time ever getting to the semifinals. It's a new format this year with the way that they do in terms of, you know, it used to be the state quarterfinals was held on the Friday.
Right.
In the state tournament. And then it was Saturday was a doubleheader, you know, semifinals and finals. Well, with the new format, this is the first time that they've actually made it to the semifinals, Bo Shane. And Thad Dickey has been there, I think, about 18 years, man. He's done a great job over there. But they just never was able to get over that hump. And I think this could be the year, man. They've got a kid in Mallory Petrie who can really pitch the ball. You know, he's got a second pitcher if need be, even though she's still kind of recovering from an ankle injury in his daughter, Caitlin Dickey. But that's a team, I think, you know, because that could really surprise. You know, they have a pitcher, and as good as I do, that's kind of half of it. You know, you have to be able to have someone in that circle that can really dominate a game and keep your team in the game. So if you have a dominant starter, that's more than half the battle in softball. So I think they're a team that you definitely have to keep an eye on because, you know, they've never been there before. They're really young. And when I say never been there before, I mean in the state semifinals. I mean, so if they were to, you're talking about get a win and next thing you know, they're playing for a state championship. But I just think based off of the job that Dickey does, it has done with that program over the years. I think if I had to pick a Cinderella team to really surprise, it would be them.
Talking to Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser. Eric, yeah, Thad's done such a great job there at Bo Shannon. I've always liked Mike Hardy, even back in his days as a UL assistant coach.
Mm-hmm.
What about Lafayette Christian Academy? You know, they've emerged in the area and other sports, football, boys and girls basketball. And now it looks like finally softball. Taylor Leger, she's so young. She's 2 years out of college, her second year as the head coach there. And they missed the postseason last year, turn it around, win their first district championship, beat teams they've never beaten before. They're a young team, but they're kind of an emerging team. What do you think about what Leger and LCA and their chances?
Well, I'll tell you what, Taylor Leger, man, it's so fun, you know, being able to talk to her because she's so passionate, but she's so positive. And I really think that they have a chance as well. You know, Catholic Aponkepi is another program that's done some good things over the year, you know, over the years in state softball. You know, LCA definitely has, they, you know, talking about a pitcher, you know, they have the Janty, and I know I'm going to kill her last name, Obe, I think is how she pronounced it, Aubie, or it's A-U-B-E. I think she's, you know, again, they have a chance because they have someone in that circle. Now, she's also a hitter as well, Janty. I mean, she's a kid who's going to get up there and you know, kind of help you out both ways. But LCA, they have a kid, another kid who, and of course, now I just drew a blank on her name because I'm trying to say it, who has 9 home runs on the year. You know, so they've got some pop in that lineup. And, you know, again, when you have a pitcher, when you have somebody that's going to give you a chance, you know, you definitely have a chance. And it starts in a circle. If they can't control the opposing team, you know, because scoring a ton of runs really – doesn't really happen all that often in the state tournament, you know, from what I remember, because it's just a different environment, man. I think nerves or whatever it may be. So, you know, you definitely don't want to be in that circle and not being able to control the game. But I definitely like LCA's chances. I like that. I like Beauchamp's chances as well. You know, and like I said, just large in part because of Janty Obe, and I'm sorry if I'm killing her name. But I think I definitely like their chances at the state tournament.
We're talking to Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser. He's their main high school athletics reporter. Eric, let's talk about a team that's usually in the mix year in, year out. They had a little bit of a lull a couple years ago, but got back to the state tournament last year, and that's the St. Thomas More Cougars. Wagas Pack, she has won 4 titles there as a head coach. The program's won 7 since the start of the century. They're back there at the state tournament. They got a tough matchup, I know. What do you expect to see out of STM starting today?
Well, they're going to go there and they're going to compete. You know, and again, I hate to sound like a broken record, but the beauty about them is that they have 2 pitchers that they can rely on, you know, in that circle. But they're going to go there and compete. And I think the best thing about STM right now is that they're probably used to being the favorite. They're used to being in that top dog role, and now they get to kind of come in as an underdog. You know, like Coach Wagasback told me, you know, hey, look, no one's expecting us to be here. We were not supposed to be this far. And all they've done is just kind of, you know, other than their first round game against Vanderbilt Catholic, you know, they upset, technically based on the seeds, Haynes Academy, who was a 3 seed, and they beat them 9-3. So now they're going to play a tough team in Archbishop Hannon, the number 2 seed. But I think, you know, again, they also can swing the bats. You know, they have some surprising power in the middle of that lineup. And I don't know. I don't know if you can count them out, just large in part because I don't think the moment is going to be too big for STM. And I think that's probably the one concern I have with, you know, the LCAs and the Beauchamps is that will the atmosphere, which is probably an atmosphere like they'll never see, you know, I mean, it's so special, the state softball tournament. But will that atmosphere be too big for those teams? And that's not a question I have for STM. I don't think the moment is going to be too big for them.
We're on with Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser. Eric, there's 2 teams from the big metropolis of Crowley, Louisiana, that have a chance to bring home some hardware. I know you're high on Notre Dame. You and I have talked about it off the air. But they have 2 teams that are in the mix there. What do you think, how that breaks down the brackets for both teams?
I'll tell you, Northside Christian, you know, they're kind of the school that, you know, we don't get out there enough. I don't know why. I don't know if it's because it's just they tend to fall through the cracks. But if you kind of pay attention to them, they always seem like they're always there in some sport. They're always making a run. And, you know, so I don't know a whole lot about them. But when it comes to Notre Dame, I know that coaches tend to try to keep them off the try to keep pressure off their kids. But the pressure's on. It's championship or bust. If Notre Dame has to win the state championship, out of every team we have, they have the best chance. To me, they have the best team. They have a kid in the circle who you know, in Sidney Seymour, who's been there before, who understands what this environment's going to be like. They have two LSU commitments in their catcher, Macy Bergeron, and her last name Savoy. Abigail, not Abigail, but her last name Savoy. She plays first base. They're both LSU commitments. They can hit it. They can pitch it. Out of all of our teams, they have the best chance of winning a state championship. But I also think that they should win the state championship. I do think that Notre Dame is the best team in that division. And I think, you know, when you're 30-0, I think, you know, the pressure is on. I don't think you can continue to tell your kids that, hey, look, well, you know, if we don't win the championship, it's okay. No, if you don't win the championship, you didn't get it done. And I think that's what it comes down to for them.
Eric, appreciate you making time for us as always, man. Enjoy being in Sulphur, and congratulations once again, brother. Best of luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on.
Eric Narcisse, Daily Advertiser, State Softball Tournament talk right there. When we come back, interview with Nick Brossett, LSU running back draft prospect right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, here on 103.7 The Game. It's time now to head out to the ArtCo Equipment Hotline as we welcome on our next guest. He is a Baton Rouge native. He went to U High, where he was a five-year starter and helped his team win the state championship in 2014 when he ran for 272 yards and three touchdowns in the championship game inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. He was a four-star prospect that signed with LSU coming out of high school. After spending 3 years backing up the likes of future NFL running backs Leonard Fournette and Darius Geis, he had his breakthrough season this past year for the Tigers, helping them win 10 games, as well as the Fiesta Bowl, as he rushed for 1,039 yards and had the third most rushing touchdowns in the SEC with 14, while averaging 4.3 yards per carry. He's now trying to become the latest LSU Tiger to be drafted at the running back position. It's our privilege to welcome on Nick Brossett. Nick, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Doing great, man. Appreciate you making some time for us. I know it's an extremely busy time of the year, an extremely busy week for you. NFL draft is going on as we speak, and you're trying your best to make things happen and get your name called here over the course of today and this weekend. Let's start right there, Nick. Just how crazy has this week and the last few weeks been for you as you've been preparing for the NFL draft?
Well, it haven't been that crazy. You know, I've really just been embracing it, and, you know, it's just been a process. So it's been a long process and everything, but I'm just enjoying the moment, and because you only go get this one time in your life, so I'm really just enjoying it and just having fun with it.
Nick, talk a little bit about, you know, you're being looked to as keeping this tradition alive of having guys drafted at the running back position there for LSU. You know, I already mentioned Leonard Fournette, Darius Geis, guys that you backed up the last few seasons. And the tradition goes back all the way back to, say, guys like Kevin Falk. Okay, so LSU has had a long tradition of producing NFL running backs. How much pride do you take in the fact that you're going to be keeping that tradition alive? Even though you may only play a small role in it, you're keeping that tradition alive here this weekend.
You know, I want to keep it alive and everything, but you know, whatever happens, happens. As long as I get an opportunity and a shot, then I'm fine with that. You know, once somebody selects me and the team I go to, then you know I'm gonna take care of the rest, and I'm gonna do the best I can and play up to my ability.
How many teams have you visited and worked out for so far in this process, Nick?
I visited the Packers, Saints, the Eagles, and Steelers.
Oh, wow. And, Steelers and Eagles, you know they like to run the ball. And the Saints, I hear they have a need at running back, man. They need some help there. So, what's your mindset, Nick, if you don't mind me asking, when you go into this process? You know, obviously you took part in the East-West Shrine Game. You went to the NFL Combine. You took part in LSU's Pro Day there in BR. You go through that whole process, and then you work out for teams. How do you keep yourself from not being too nervous and too amped up when you go and you meet with these coaches and you sit down with them and you work out with them? You know, what's been the mindset, and who have you been able to lean on anyone for advice going through this whole process?
Really, truly, I've been leaning a lot on Darrell Williams. You know, he's one of my best friends, and, he went through the same process I'm going through right now. So, I asked him a lot of questions, and he gave me a lot of detail and things like that. But, really and truly, I just look at it as it's just another opportunity for me to get better and for me to better myself, And at the end of the day, it's still football, so I don't want to make it bigger as it is, My coach always told me, my running back coach, T-Rob, he always told me, don't let the moment be bigger than you. So I live by that every day, and, I treat it. That's how I treat it.
That's a great mindset to have. We're talking to Nick Brissett, former LSU star running back. He led the team in rushing last year with more than 1,000 yards and had the third most rushing touchdowns in the SEC with 14. He's gearing up for the draft this weekend. Nick, let's talk a little bit about, I know you've talked about this in the past, that you were the backup, you were a superstar coming out of high school, and you were part of a very crowded backfield there at LSU. You had to wait your turn. And, man, you seized the moment. I want you to take me back to the season opener against Miami there at AT&T Stadium in Arlington against Miami, and you just bust off a 125-yard performance and just kind of set the tone, man. You just boom. You're like, hey, I'm here. I'm taking this job. I'm going to try to become the featured back this year. Walk me through that first game and how great that felt when you were out there and doing what you did.
It was a great opportunity, just to go out there and showcase my talent. And I just went out there and I was really just being me, really and truly I just got my confidence back, I got my swagger back, and after that the rest was history. Coach O and they all gave me an opportunity, so I took full advantage of it, and then I ran with the opportunity.
And to do it on such a big stage, too, man, in a primetime game there on that Sunday night, right there in Jerry World where the Cowboys play, it doesn't get much bigger than that. And then you end the season on the big stage as well in the Fiesta Bowl. Talk a little bit about y'all's season and how you were able to kind of help the team bounce back from a disappointing year the year before. You guys won 10 wins this past season, emerged as a contender for the college football playoff. What was that like to be part of that and to help your team achieve those goals, man?
Coming in the last year's season, we had a lot of people doubting us saying we're going to go 6-6 and things like that. But so, we came in that season, we had a chip on our shoulders, and we had a lot to prove. So that was our mindset. And then we was really, those first couple of games, we was rolling, we had a lot of confidence and things like that. But we were really just trying to set a new tradition there and just trying to help the LSU program. And I think we're headed in the right direction.
Nick, what kind of runner are you that you've been telling teams if they had to ask you, front office personnel, ask you what kind of player you are, what kind of running back you are? What are you telling them?
I'm a complete back. Pass pro. I run between tackles and I can catch the football. And also I can play special teams as well. So, whoever drafts me and whoever selects me, then I feel like they're getting a threat, and I feel like they're going to get steal of the draft.
What is going to be the plans for this today and this weekend, man, when you're expected to be drafted? Are you doing anything with the family, friends, or is it going to be a big party? What's the draft weekend plans for you and your family, man?
I'm really true. I'm just gonna hang out and just watch the draft, just to see whatever happens and stuff like that. So I'd just be hanging out with my family and, you know, just waiting on a phone call and just watching it and stuff like that. Nothing too big.
So you're going to try to keep it as low-key as possible, huh?
Yeah, until afterwards. I have a big hurrah afterwards.
I like that, until afterwards. Have you allowed yourself, Nick, to imagine or even daydream about receiving that phone call, man? Have you been thinking about that at all?
Yeah, I thought about it. I definitely thought about it, you know. But, you know, at the end of the day, I just want an opportunity, you know. I just want a fresh start. And that's really about it, you know. I'm not looking for nothing big or anything. But, you know, I'm really just leaving it up to God. And then just whatever happens, happens. I'm going to go from there.
Well, Nick, I appreciate you taking some time out with us on this busy week for you, man. We want to wish you the best of luck with the draft, and keep up the hard work in the future, my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
That's Nick Brissett, former LSU star running back. He'll be drafted likely this weekend, either today on Friday or on Saturday in the NFL draft, which will be taking place in Nashville. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, more sports talk. Right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I am your illustrious, wise beyond his years, and stunningly handsome host. Hold on. All those things are lies. Ha ha ha. All those things are lies. I'm Raymond Farce III, the man on the ones and twos, as always, is Cody Schutz, and we're broadcasting live right here from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also, simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. We spent the first hour talking NFL draft. We focused in on, of course, Devin White being selected number 5 overall by the Tampa Bay Bucks. Sorry, people who are LSU/Saints fans, which is the majority of the state of Louisiana. We also talked about the fact that it appears that the New York Giants had been drinking Thunderbird before making their selections. Really? I still can't get Jones in the top 10. Okay, whatever. We also dove in with my rant of the week about how teams are not built. Super Bowl championships are not won based on who you draft in the first round. And I guarantee you, my next guest is going to agree with me on that topic. We're going to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our good friend. He's a contributor for the Saints News Network as well as Big Easy Magazine. He's down in New Orleans Metairie area for the New Orleans Saints draft extravaganza that hopefully will be more than just one pick today. It's our boy Barry Herstis. How are you doing this morning, Barry?
Good morning, RP3. How are you, sir?
You doing okay, man? You sound a little under the weather. Are you having too much of a good time down there?
I was up all night pretty much.
There it is.
I mean, you got to stay up, man. It's, you know, you got to stay up to midnight just to watch the NFL draft nowadays. I remember as a kid when it used to come on early in the morning on a Monday morning they would do it on back in the day, and when ESPN was originally covering it in those early days. So it's completely changed now. It's a big event. We got fireworks and live bands on the stage, and oh man, it's just incredible.
Yeah, it took way too long though last night. The first round just dragged,
yeah.
Dragged on. Barry, the Saints did not trade up into the first round. They stayed pat. You had talked about this last week that we anticipated that and them possibly making some sort of move on day two, getting another second rounder or a third round pick, something like that. Now that we're here, on the day of, do you still feel, based on the kind of the reaction that you're getting down there, do you still feel like that's going to be the case, that they're going to make some sort of move, whether it's a trade of a player or an asset, that's going to allow them to have multiple picks today for the second and third rounds?
Yeah, I fully anticipate they're going to do something to get back into the third round. Don't hold me to that, but I would imagine there is so much talent still on the board. I mean, we had said this was a deep draft, and I mean, if you look on the board right now and look at it's ridiculous. So they're there, and we had said that, you recall, we said this exact thing last week, that it was such a deep class this year, and then that you basically had 15 to 20 guys in that top tier. And then so the thought was basically from player number 25, let's say, to player number 70, 75, you could just flip a coin basically. So it's just that deep. So you're gonna get a pretty good football player at number 62. I know a lot of Saints fans were so disappointed, you know, because of them having a limited number of picks this year. But the way it's shaken out, number 62 is going to be a pretty good football player. Now, there's no guarantee that this it's going to wind up being somebody that, you know, is the missing piece, so to speak, is the key ingredient that's going to get them, propel them to a Super Bowl run. We don't know that. But bottom line is, I mean, look, we only had two receivers that went in the first round. I mean, it's unbelievable the amount of, we talked about the Saints possibly targeting a wide receiver with that pick. There's going to be a very good wide receiver still sitting on the clock at number 62.
I'm talking to Barry Hursis, New Orleans Saints reporter for the Big Easy magazine, as well as the Saints News Network. Barry, there's a slew of great players available still on the board. Interesting run towards the back end of the first round where guys were kind of picked up that I wasn't anticipating. Of the first round, now that it's in the books, what surprised you the most, both pleasant and not so pleasant?
Clearly, the Giants pick of Jones, as you alluded to when you came back from break. I mean, man, is that a reach or what? Look, I get that the Giants had to replace Eli Manning. That was inevitable. But, man, you had Haskins sitting there, the guy that everybody's projecting you to take. To me, that would have been a no-brainer at that spot. I mean, you could even had Drew Locke. You could have had Drew Locke over Daniel Jones. So, I mean, man, talk about a head-scratcher. I like what the Raiders did, believe it or not. We always make fun of John Gruden and the Raiders because they're kind of the most, the dysfunctional team in the NFL, the Oakland / Las Vegas / wherever else they might end up Raiders. But I thought those were some pretty decent moves they made. So I kind of like what they did. Man, the Patriots, the rich get richer, man. N'Keal Harry. In that offense, I thought they were going to go Drew Locke at that spot for sure, just because you need the heir apparent to Tom Brady. But they went wide receiver in that spot, which they needed. So I like what they did as well.
It just, the longer they wait to draft the heir apparent, it just feels to me, Barry, talking about the Patriots, it just feels to me when Tom Brady retires, Bill Belichick's going to be like, I'm going to retire, and Bob Kraft's going to be like, I'm selling the team. It's all going to happen at the same time, and they're just going to let someone else have to worry about that issue, and they're not going to deal with it. Best players available to start the second round, Barry, in your opinion, and who do you think could possibly fall to the Saints if they stay pat where they're at?
Again, you heard me allude to the wide receivers. So, I mean, there's guys like Paris Campbell of Ohio State, who is the player that, I mocked the Saints in my final Saints mock draft. I had the Saints. I actually thought Paris Campbell might fall a little bit, and it looks like I'm going to be exactly right. Will he get to 62 is the question, because he's one of those speedsters that we spoke of. But even if he went, man, he still got a kid like Deebo Samuel. Out of South Carolina. He's another guy that's been projected to the Saints a lot. So Andy Isabella, the burner out of UMass, the underrated guy who's just, phenomenal player. So there's just a lot of – and then you got all those tight ends we discussed. Don't be shocked that the Saints went tight end. Jay Sternberger from Texas A&M is there. You got Irv Smith, who the Saints have been kind of tied to, Irv Smith Jr., whose dad famously was drafted by the Saints. He's still there. That's kind of a player that's kind of been linked to the Saints. So, I mean, man, it's just such a deep board right now. We should kind of feel kind of fortunate because of all the different scenarios that could have played out, the stars are aligning to where the Saints are going to get a pretty good football player, considering it's number 62.
Yeah, and there's so many, you mentioned it, and I want to kind of piggyback off of that a little bit, Barry, if you don't mind, is that there's so many guys that are going to that have fallen to the second round. They're not going to take a cornerback like Greedy Williams out of LSU, obviously, because they're locked up there, but Dalton Risner, the kid out of Kansas State, the offensive tackle, he's a stud.
Yeah.
That could be a guy that could fall to them. Juwan Taylor, who most people had going in the top 10, but is just one of those things where they people didn't need tackles, right? So that the run went on defensive line.
Absolutely, I can see it. And look, and here, I'll throw this name out here, and you and I touched on it, I think, a few weeks ago, and it's in my article right now at Big Easy Magazine. I addressed some of the last-minute rumors kind of surrounding the Saints, and just I'm just throwing it out there because he's still there. Will Greer, quarterback for West Virginia. I know the Saints re-signed Teddy Bridgewater. I know they got Taysom Hill. And I'm not suggesting that they would yes, guarantee you draft a quarterback at number 62. But they went to West Virginia. The Saints sent their scouts to West Virginia's pro day to watch Will Greer.
The most scouts there for the pro day were from the Saints. They had like 8 or 9 scouts.
Correct. And as I alluded to in the article, am I suggesting that Teddy Bridgewater or Taysom Hill won't get their shot at becoming the heir apparent to Drew Brees someday? No, I'm not suggesting that. But all I'm saying is, look, Sean Payton is the one who discovered Tony Romo for Bill Parcells. So as I explained in the article, it might sound like the most preposterous thing you've ever heard to think that the Saints would target a quarterback at 62, but it's not. A kid like Will Greer is somebody they've scouted heavily, and they have their eye on it. If he falls to 62, I'm not suggesting that would be the pick. I'm just saying if he fell that far, because a lot of people are expecting him to go in this late first round pick. Maybe he'll go in the first few picks later this afternoon. We'll see. But just a name to remember. Just throwing it out there.
Barry. Appreciate it as always, brother. Enjoy the rest of the draft. Hopefully, Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland, and company will do what they need to do to get some more picks. That way, you'll have plenty to write about today, my friend.
Oh, yeah. And look, and one more thing before we go. Always remember, the Saints are one of the best teams at signing undrafted free agents. Pay attention. Pay very close attention Saturday afternoon as soon as the draft's over. Catch the Saturday evening news and watch some of those names. I guarantee you, RP3, all these names you never heard of, all these undrafted guys that they signed Saturday, I guarantee you 2 or 3 of those guys will make that final roster. Because the Saints are just one of the best at what they do in that regard.
Barry, appreciate you as always, brother. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you next week, my friend, recapping the draft.
Yes, sir. Look forward to it as always.
That's our boy, Barry Hirsus. A little sleep-deprived. Sounds like a little under the weather.
Sounds like he's gone through the ringer, man.
It sounds like he enjoyed himself.
Yeah, I mean, when Barry Hirsus cuts loose, Barry Hirsus cuts loose. He still brought it, though. I mean, he could have very easily ignored the phone call this morning, could have very easily sent a text message saying, like, ooh, it's a no-go this morning, fellas. I'm struggling.
He's
but
a champ.
He came through a pro's pro.
There it is.
He owns many leather-bound books.
When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll pause on the draft conversation, touch on the Astros. They had a big game last night there at the Big Juice Box versus the Cleveland Indians. It didn't end well for them. We'll dissect it right here on 103.7 The Game. You can do it.
2-1. And this ball's pulled down the right field line. Reddick going back on it. He's on the warning track, and it's gone. Leonis Martin, with his fourth home run of the season, puts the Indians on the board. Didn't get that high, but it sure did carry.
And that's lifted left field fairly deep. Sends back Brantley at the wall, looking up, and see you later. Into the first row of the Landry's Crawford boxes. Just did clear the yellow line. And Jake Bowers has the third home run in this ball game. It's 2-1 Cleveland.
And that's how the game would end, as the Stros fell at home to the Cleveland Indians 2-1 last night there at Minute Maid Park. Trevor Bauer was amazing. He may be the most hated man in baseball. I think Bryce Harper has something to say about that, too.
I have Alan Michael knew this. I need to say it out loud to you. I have a love-hate relationship with Tyler Bauer.
Trevor.
No, it's Tyler. There's the joke again as well. You don't call him by his real name. He's Tyler Bauer. Patrick McClellan would understand that joke. But, yes, Trevor Bauer / Tyler Bauer. If you look, Alex Bregman, anytime on his Twitter he refers to him, he calls him Tyler. Bauer is really funny.
Nice.
But I have a love-hate relationship with him. I hate Trevor Bauer, to not confuse anyone, because he was on the mound sending LSU home in the College World Series 2 in barbecue when they lost to UCLA. Wasn't 2 in barbecue, but they lost to UCLA. Mm-hmm. Both games in Omaha 1 year, and I believe Tyler Bauer saw the mound in, I believe, both of those games and was on the mound to end the second one to send LSU. So I hated him, right? Well, he makes it to the major leagues. He's doing his thing. He's with the Indians. Yeah, guess who was on the mound giving the Cubs a very nice victory there in the World Series? That would be one Trevor Tyler Bauer. So I hate him for sending LSU home, but I love him for sucking real bad and letting the Cubs win the World Series. So I have a love-hate relationship with Tyler Trevor Bauer.
I understand that. I can understand that. I can appreciate
that.
He
screwed one of my teams, but then he gave my other team the big title. So,
And far more long-suffering.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's no comparison.
A little bit. You'll sacrifice a College World Series early defeat. You know, it's not like they lost in the championship game.
Right. It was like their third game. They lost the opening game to UCLA, won the second game, and then lost the third game to UCLA or something like that. So,
Bauer was very good last night. He pitched a season-high 8 innings, allowed just 1 run over 118 pitches. He dominated the Stros lineup, but did not do so striking out a lot of guys. He only had 3 strikeouts. And he walked 6 batters, but he had a very un-Bauer way of getting outs. 9 ground outs and 5 flyouts, which is not his forte. He's a strikeout pitcher. And on the flip side of that, though, look, when you only give up 2 runs, you think that's not a bad outing for the Stros, okay? It's just not. Gerrit Cole gave up only 2 runs, but, you know, gave up the 343-foot home run.
The wall is 340, just so you know.
So, yes, just so you know. So, you know, still a decent performance by Cole out on the bump for the Stros. But, look, Bauer was terrific. He really was. He was terrific. And he moves to 8-0 now in his career against Houston in the regular season with an ERA of 2.90. So he's lights out when he faces the Astros. That's the team that he salivates about wanting to pitch against more than any other.
Maybe you should stop calling him Tyler there, Alex.
Maybe. Now, he did pitch in all 3 American League Division Series losses, though, against the Astros last season, but did not earn a decision in any of them, which is a weird stat.
You know how it gets, though, when it gets to the pennant and into the World Series, starters are coming out of the bullpen to pitch in the 6th inning. And
right.
So it gets kind of confusing. I assume that's what happened. He came in, like, middle relief.
They call in someone, and you're like, oh, who the hell is this guy?
I mean, it could be. He could have started 2 games in that series and made it to the 6th inning with the game still tied, maybe, and then the bullpen let I don't know exactly how it happened.
There was a bit of controversy, though, during the game. in the sixth inning, Bauer appeared to be in a jam, but then got out of it when shortstop Carlos Correa hit into a controversial double play. Altuve led off the inning with a walk, and then Michael Brantley got a one-out signal that put runners at both first and second. And then Correa swung at a 2-2 pitch that bounced up the third baseline. And this is where the controversy comes in. Apparently, Jose Ramirez fielded the ball for the Indians and stepped on third as the runners, including Correa, stopped. Ramirez then threw across the diamond to Carlos Santana at first to complete the double play, as Houston manager A.J. Hinch was not happy. Came out to argue with home plate umpire that the ball had hit Correa's left foot while he was in the batter's box. But Hinch's pleas fell on deaf ears. The double play stood, and the Indians would go on to win the 2-1. Pull out the 2-1 victory, so to speak. Astros and Indians will get it together again tonight there at the Big Juice Box. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're going to talk a little bit more draft, a little bit more NFL, with Nish Hall of Famer and 10-year NFL veteran, second-round draft pick in the 1983 draft, the one and only Johnny Hector is going to be joining us here, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
But it's definitely a boost when, you know, when you look up in the stands and you see your mom, see your dad, night in and night out, it's just different. I encourage everybody to be an opportunity to play at home, to do it, deserve the feeling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parch III, and we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also being simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1, the Stadium Network. It's time to welcome on our next guest. He's one of the best to ever do it out of the Acadiana area. He's a Lafayette native who grew up in New Iberia, where he starred at New Iberia Senior High, earning All-State honors twice, including being named the Class 4A State MVP on offense. He would go on to play four successful seasons at Texas A&M, where he would amass 2,500 yards and scoring 20 total touchdowns while averaging 4.7 yards per carry. He was taken by the New York Jets in the second round of the 1983 NFL draft with the number 51 overall pick. He would play his entire 10 seasons in the NFL, all with the Jets. In 1987, he was tied with the most rushing touchdowns in the NFL with 11. And, of course, he was part of the Jets' famed two-headed monster backfield with Freeman and McNeil in the mid to late 1980s. It's our privilege to welcome to the show the one and only Johnny Hector. Johnny, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing great, and thank you guys for inviting me.
Well, we appreciate you making time for us, and we thought it would be the better time. No better time than now, my friend, than to have you on the show with the NFL draft today. Going to be the second and third round. You were obviously a second round draft pick. So let's go back there. And I know it's been a long time.
Oh, yes, sir.
It's been a long time. Oh, I know things have changed drastically how the draft process goes today than it was back then. But walk me through just how stressful and exciting and maybe even overwhelming the whole process was once you were done with Texas A&M and you had declared for the NFL draft and you going through the process. What was that like for you?
Well, for me personally, I was always a low-key guy. So I remember the day of the draft with my roommate. and myself, and he invited another guy over to watch the draft. So I wasn't at home. I didn't have a big fanfare because I was always one of these guys who always felt like, you know, until I see tomorrow, then I know it's tomorrow, if you know what I mean.
You know?
And to think that, because I was projected as a first rounder my senior year, I got, I think, missed a few games because of injuries and stuff I got, whatever. But so I ended up falling in the second round. But growing up as a young man and just having an opportunity, or wanting to just get an opportunity just to play in the NFL, I didn't really worry about the draft. I just wanted somebody to say, hey, like, come over here, you know, let's see what you got. And I got that opportunity.
So walk us through that process, though, Johnny. You got the phone. Did you find out watching on television, or did you get a phone call? Did you already have an agent lined up, or did someone call your room? How did that work out?
I didn't have an agent. They had my phone number, and it was actually, I was watching, it was funny because I'm watching it, or we're watching it on TV in our apartment. And, you know, I hear the announcement and the Jets take running back, Johnny Hecht, the Texas A&M. Next thing I know, my phone is ringing, and I'm on the phone with the head coach at the time, Joe Walton. And then when I hung up the phone, the guy that was watching, I don't remember the guy's name, that was with my roommate and I, he was like, who's the Jets head coach? I was like, I don't know. I just hung up the phone with him. So that's kind of my story, you know.
Obviously, an immensely exciting time for you. I mean, New Iberia is not a small town by any stretch of the imagination, but it's still far smaller than, say, going to play in New York and New Jersey that you did for 10 years, not to mention College Station is a little remote as well.
Right, that's exactly right.
How big-eyed were you, so to speak, when you got there and you started playing for the Jets?
It was actually kind of funny, I guess, also eerie, if you want to call it. Because I had gone up there to New York for a combine.
Okay.
And had a few guys come up there and stuff like that. And I remember thinking, like, man, this is like, it's just too many people. This is too busy for me, whatever. And it's like, I hope I don't go to the Jets. And I had a dream that I was drafted by the Jets. That's a true story. I was drafted by the Jets. And sure enough, they drafted me.
So how far out did you have that dream? Like, from the actual draft?
It was after the combine, in between the draft date and the combine, somewhere along that line, I had a dream that the Jets had drafted me.
So when you woke up, did you feel like that was a nightmare then?
Because I was like, yeah, huh, no, gosh darn.
We're talking to Johnny Hector here on RP3 and Company. Now, Johnny, you go through the opportunity. Obviously, it's a big deal, especially for your hometown in New Iberia, even though there's been a ton of guys that have come out and have gone on to college, and many have gone on to be drafted, play in the NFL, not only in New Iberia, but throughout the entire Tesh area, including St. Martinville, which has always been able to produce a ton of athletes. How nervous were you, though, when you report for rookie camp?
Oh, well, the first time we went, I mean, you still got the butterflies and the excitement of like, man, am I really going to be a part of this? But it's just the rookies. So the reality doesn't come in until you actually step on the field and see guys that were, you know, the veteran guys come in, and it's like, oh, wow, so you really are part of this. And then it's like, you got to show and prove that you belong. Because, you know, these guys are looking at you, you know, you're a rookie, I mean, what can you bring to the table and stuff like that? And I think after, you know, seeing me, and especially in game situations, they saw that because I've had compliments from teammates because, you know, saying that, man, you never give up or whatever. Well, that's not what, you know, that's not the bread I'm cut from.
Johnny, you know, that first year, your rookie season, you played mostly as a backup, but you also did a lot of kick return duties that year. But then the next three seasons, your reps, the amount of carries, the yardage kept increasing. Was that simply just a confidence builder, or was there a turning point for you maybe even during that rookie season or your second year where you're like, hey, you know what? I belong on this level. I can play at this level, and I'm going to have a long career.
Well, it was still a learning process and making sure you kind of a little bit ahead of the game when you see certain defenses and stuff like that and what you can do against them. And just also being a running back, 195 pounds, I've given the analogy of if someone is doing a bench press and somebody's spotting them, and on the last one, they have a little bit of trouble trying to get it up, and all it takes is a finger to just lift up that bar, and all of a sudden they can push it. Well, that was kind of my attitude running into the back of a line. Even if there's a stalemate with the defensive lineman, if you ran at their backs, they're probably going to start driving them. At least we'll pick up a yard or two or three even, you know, sometimes.
Oh, wow. Early on in your career, what was that moment when maybe you got popped by someone, that kind of welcome to the NFL moment? I know a lot of guys always have that, especially running backs. It's usually a linebacker that gets them. Or maybe you did it to someone else. What was that moment for you?
Well, actually, it happened, I think I was my freshman year at Texas A&M, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah, and you know, I'd never been hit that hard on a football field, and it was like, man, I wanted to get on the bus and come back to New Iberia.
Who was, if you don't mind asking? Who
Mike
was?
Singletary, Baylor Bears.
Oh.
Mike Singletary.
Oh, wow.
Man, it's like, whoa. So I always promised myself I would never try to get a lick like that again.
Did you ever face off with Mike in the pros?
Oh, yeah. We played the Bears in 85 when they were beating up, you know, everybody. In fact, one of my A&M mates, Thomas Sanders, a running back with the Bears, came up to me after the game. Of course, you know, the Bears were beating everybody, and him and Walter Payton came up. He's like, man, you know what? Of course I know Walter Payton, man. And I'm like, looking at him like, okay, y'all done beat our butts. Now, you want to have a conversation? It's freezing out here. I'm trying to get in the locker room. So, in fact, he and I laugh about that to this day, man.
We're talking to Johnny Hector, former New Iberia Senior High star. He was part of the first induction class into that school's Athletic Hall of Fame, and he was also a 10-year pro for the New York Jets. You were known as a terrific inside runner, power runner, downhill guy, but you also had very good hands. You were very much a multi-purpose back. Was that something that came naturally? I know you caught passes at Texas A&M, but it seemed like that really developed even more so when you got to the pros. Was that something that you made sure to add to your game to make you even more valuable to the franchise?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, especially as a professional, you try to improve on, you know, if there's weaknesses. In fact, one of the first things I had to learn, the way I carried the football, because my rookie year had a couple fumbles that was, you know, then looking at the tapes and stuff and films. And then, you know, of course, they know, you know, they put the football in your hand. You got to walk around, even if you go into the lunchroom and guys try to knock it out your hand, that type of stuff, just to make you aware of holding a football, because I used to swing it away from my body. And after that, you know, just learning and stuff like that, I really didn't fumble the ball after that much.
Talk a little bit about your time there in the mid to late 80s when the Jets had that great two-headed monster, as it was called, by the media up there with you and Freeman McNeil. What was that like, having both of you guys out there and just being able to kind of crush opponents with the strong running game?
Well, it actually started even before then. Like you said, early on in my career, just the New York media and reading stuff, Freeman was out like, oh, well, the Jets don't have a running game without Freeman McNeil. And I'm thinking like, hello, you know, here I am, you know what I'm saying? In fact, let me show you better than opening my mouth, you know. And I tried to, you know, just perform on the field and stuff like that. And I think after, you know, several times of going down that road and seeing what I can do on the field, I think the coaches also got more confidence in me, like, you know, hey, this guy, he doesn't give up.
Johnny, I think it's underrated what you were able to do in the pros because, you know, right now, you still remain as the New York Jets' fifth all-time leading rusher in franchise history, and you still have the third most rushing touchdowns in franchise history as well. When you look back now, 10-year career, that's a long time, especially for a running back. Average career of an NFL player, I think, is like, what, 3.2 years?
Right.
Exactly. You were able to last an entire decade in the league. When you look back now on your career with the Jets, how do you view it?
Well, I would say I was extremely fortunate and blessed not to sustain any significant injuries. Of course, I had a lot of ankle sprains and the shoulders deals and stuff like that. In fact, I had five surgeries, just scopes on my right knee alone and one on my left. And I probably should have had surgeries on other things, but, you know, if you can tolerate the pain, you know, that's how the NFL is. So if you can tolerate the pain and play with it, then so be it.
When did you know, Johnny, that it was time to hang it up?
In 1990, I think we had a coaching change with the Jets. And Joe Walton was let go, and Bruce Kozlik was brought in. And just a new regime, and just the feeling I got, like, you know, it's like, okay, here I am. Here's, you know, and I made my sort of my living, short yardage, goal line, you know, whatever situations and stuff. And I found myself, like, on the sidelines. It's like, okay, you know, I have a resume of picking up first downs. Like, why am I on the sidelines, you know? So I went through that phase and stuff like that. So I actually started contemplating retirement by year eight, to be honest with you.
Oh, really? What made you want to stick around? Was it just still the love of the game?
Just definitely just the love of the game. And just got to a point to where it's like, do you really want to continue getting your body, you know, beat up and all that stuff? And I made the decision to say I had enough and just walked away and never looked back.
Let's go further back. We're talking to Johnny Hector, Nish Hall of Famer and a 10-year pro in the National Football League, all with the New York Jets. He was a second-round pick in the infamous 1983 draft, considered to be many to be one of the greatest of all time. You know, you're growing up in New Iberia. You go to Nish. You have a tremendous career there where you earn All-State MVP honors. And you're being recruited by the likes of Notre Dame and the likes of Ohio State and obviously, you know, Texas A&M. Walk me through that process. I know I've seen some stuff in the past, Johnny, where the reason why Ohio State and Notre Dame kind of fell by the wayside had a little bit to do about how cold those winters were. Is that true?
Very true. You know, I mean, I go up to South Bend, and it's like in January, and I'm like, I'm from New Iberia, Louisiana. It is cold up here. You know what I'm saying? And it's basically the same thing when I went to visit Notre Dame, and you know all the about the Golden Dome and the whole nine, whatever. But I mean, I really didn't grow up watching football. You know, I grew up playing it and playing outside, but I didn't have a team. I never knew like what college would be a great school to go to. I didn't know
anything. So all that kind of tradition that those programs had really didn't maybe impress you all that much because you weren't aware of it.
That's exactly right. Two-time Heisman Trophy winner at Ohio State and all that stuff. I saw that, and it was like, okay. And, you know what I'm saying? I mean, really, that was my attitude.
You were also a terrific track and field star at Nish as well, earning All-State honors there and a state champion in multiple events. So you're going through the recruiting process. You have the power. You have the speed. You're just this freak of nature athletically. What was it about A&M that you really liked? And what were some other teams maybe in the southeast or southwest part of the United States that were recruiting you that you were really considering before settling on A&M?
Well, University of Texas actually was one of my visits also, along with Texas A&M. And my visit to A&M was kind of like I was in New Iberia almost, you know what I'm saying, with the college basically, if you've ever been to College Station. So that was a feeling I got. So that was a good thing, I guess. And if it wasn't for an infamous phone call from an LSU person, I probably would have ended up going to LSU.
So I have to ask you, Johnny, you infamous phone call. I know some people probably that are listening probably or know that. Can you briefly tell us what that exactly is?
Well, and I try not to even bring this up, and especially in a forum like this, because I'm, you know, my hat's off. LSU is a great school. I got a lot of friends and, you know, people that graduated from that school.
Right, it's the state's flagship school.
You know, it was just unfortunate what happened to me as a 17, 18-year-old kid, and somebody called basically and threatened a member of my family for me to go to LSU. That's basically what happened.
And that pretty much shut it down. You're like, no.
That's exactly right.
A&M, though, you mentioned Texas A&M, you know, College Station. It does kind of have that kind of small-town feel to it.
Right.
You decide to go there. You have a successful career. But the interesting thing about you is that you never had the opportunity to be that kind of traditional feature back. It was always a backfield that you always had to share reps with. And yet, despite that, whether it was with the four seasons at A&M or your entire career with the New York Jets, you still found a time to shine. Where did that mindset come from? Was that something that you just were kind of born, or was that something that you kind of developed like, you know what, I'm not going to get 30 carries a game here, but whatever carries I get or whatever time I'm going to get in a game, I'm going to make it count and make my mark. When did that mindset kind of take hold for you?
Well, I mean, I guess I've always felt like, you know, I was skillful enough. But when you have this, this is basically how I've always looked at this whole process for me personally. When I was representing or playing at New Iberia Senior High, I'm not only representing the name on my jersey, but I'm representing the town of New Iberia.
Right.
That's the way I've always looked at it. And when I left and went to Texas A&M, now I'm representing Texas A&M, the state of Texas, the state of Louisiana, New Iberia, you know. And I felt the same way when I went to New York, you know.
So you just kept it was very much you had to do whatever you do to
so it was always bigger
to earn to earn the right to wear that jersey and to
right.
and to represent where you're from.
That's
and the
exactly
team that you're
right.
representing.
Yeah, right, that's exactly right.
Obviously, you've done a lot of stuff back in the community. You co-founded a free local youth football clinic. I want to say that's with Corey Raymond.
Yeah, we did that for, I want to say, 14 years.
So you've done a lot to give back to your community. What kind of advice could you give these younger guys that are right now, if whether they're coming up at New Iberia Senior High or in New Iberia at Westgate or whatever the process may be, guys that are coming up through the area, through Acadiana, through the state, that are going through this process, this draft process, and all everything that comes with that and the stress that comes with that, what kind of advice would you give them about dealing with that and then also being able to succeed in the NFL like you did?
Well, I would say surround yourself with people who are going to be honest with you and kind of know a little bit about what they're doing. If not, maybe they can help you or guide you to the people, professionals, that can help you accomplish what you want to accomplish. Because, you know, like I said, there's a lot of people, especially in the day I came out, I remember going to one of the bowl games, and it's like there's agents everywhere.
Yeah.
That's back in the day when you didn't have to be certified, you know, and they would come at you.
It's kind of the Wild West days of recruiting
exactly.
back then.
That's
yeah,
exactly yeah. right. And come at you with a suitcase full of money, say, hey, this is yours if you sign with us. It's like, I'm poor, but I'm not stupid. You know what I'm saying?
I'm poor, but I'm not stupid. I love that, Johnny. I love that. Well, look, man, I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to make some time for us there. And I appreciate you coming on, and thank you for sharing your story, man.
Oh,
and,
anytime.
Much appreciated. Johnny Hector, 10-year NFL vet, second-round draft pick by the New York Jets back in 1983, and a member of the New Iberia Senior High Athletic Hall of Fame, joining us here on RP3 and Company. We got to go to a break. More sports talk coming up next, right here on 103.7 The Game. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards has proclaimed the month of April as Safe Digging Month here in Louisiana as part of a nationwide safety awareness campaign to draw attention to the importance of safe digging. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. So if you or a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, swimming pool, or even just a small garden, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. That's why it's so important for everyone to dial 811 and call Louisiana One Call 2 days before they dig. You just tell the operator your address and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. It's simple, it's free, and it's the law. All diggers and demolishers are required to notify Louisiana One Call before they begin work. The law applies to individuals as well as contractors, municipalities, and others. Failure to call can subject the individual to fines and liability for damages to buried infrastructure. So call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Coming up next here on RP3 and Company, our good friend Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag is going to give us his thoughts on the Will Wade restructured contract as well as the NFL draft right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios. presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. It's time now to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our fifth and final guest on this kicking butt and taking names Friday edition of RP3 and Company. He's always bats cleanup for us week in and week out. It's how we end the week is with this individual because, well, he's just that awesome. He's from Tiger Rag. It's the one and only Tyler Nunes. Tyler, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well. There's a helicopter flying over me right now. Give me one sec, and it's gone. Okay, so
we just interrupted you being chased down by authorities, is what you're trying to tell us.
Apparently so. Timing couldn't have been worse here.
He's making his
I'm in
his
Orange
Charlotte
Beach for a bachelor party, and I had to step outside so I didn't wake everybody up. But not, they're gone now.
You're not making your Charlotte Flair entrance to WrestleMania in your helicopter there, Tyler?
Well,
is that
okay. No, but you gave me Finn Balor last week. You got me Becky Lynch this week. I got to wonder if you're telling me something about my heritage. I don't know. I didn't realize I was so Irish.
Oh, dang, that one went over my head too, brother.
Yeah,
my head.
Yeah, because Nunes, that's a prominent Irish name. That's a prominent Irish name. Oh.
I got a little red in the beard.
There you go. All right, Tyler. So let's before we get talking draft talk and LSU players and the dynamic there, I want to get your thoughts on something that happened earlier in the week. I know you did some reporting on it.
Yeah.
The surprising news that came out that Will Wade, the reinstated head men's basketball coach there at LSU, not only opted to give up his bonus that he achieved this year for the fact that the Tigers won the regular season championship and went to the Sweet 16, that he also agreed to restructure his contract with those amendments to make it easier for the university to fire him. How surprised were you of that?
Not really, actually. I felt like there had to be some consequence for not talking to Oliva for 5 weeks in total. I think losing the bonuses are kind of fair. I mean, it's 10% of his contract. He makes $2.5 million a year. I don't think it's really going to hurt him that badly. I'm sure he would have liked that $250,000, but frankly, he's got enough money to make up for it. He'll be okay on that end. And then firing him, or to make it easier, firing him, I'm of the opinion that those amendments should be in every contract. If you get found guilty of a level one or level two infraction, I think that, personally, I think most coaches should be losing their jobs. I understand why they're not in there. There's an appeals process, and you can stand by your coach. But I think what Will Wade's done so far has given the university plenty of reason for worry. The level one and level two infraction still might come for those wiretap phone calls. I think it's just LSU has to cover their bases here, or else they're going to get slammed by the NCAA pretty hard.
Tyler, does that make it interesting, though, that that's come out and you said you kind of expected that? Does make sense. That should be part of every contract, in my opinion, as well. I agree with you on that point, that this went down and former athletic director Joe Oliva, he was part of this, and they get Will Wade to agree to this, to give up the bonus and to essentially make it easier for them to fire him. But as we know, behind the scenes, there was working going on of having Joe, you know, replacing Joe at the same time. Was that just a coincidence, or was that something, you know, I just found that to be interesting. I don't know if there's anything behind it. It's just interesting now that we find out that Oliva took this hard stance with Will Wade, got him to agree to this amendments to his contract, and then a few days later he steps down, you know, the quote-unquote resigning.
Yeah, a lot of people want to make this out to be like, Will Wade got Joe Oliva fired. I don't think that's really what happened. I think the situation may have served as a catalyst. But if we're being honest, like Joe Oliva, I mean, his contract is up next summer. I don't want to call him a lame duck. That's kind of rude. But, like, he didn't have much. His time at LSU was almost coming to an end anyway. And I think when they put their feelers out and they saw that Scott Woodward was serious about wanting to come to Baton Rouge, I think that they couldn't help but – I mean, they had to. It was just the right call to make. Scott Woodward is one of the best up-and-coming athletics directors in the country. If he wants to come to your program, you go out and get him. It doesn't really matter what kind of situation you're in.
All right, Tyler, let's switch over. Wanted to touch on the hoops. Let's go back to football.
Okay.
Devin White, as expected, top five pick. He had been linked to the Tampa Bay Bucks for, hell, what, a month and a half, it seems like, or even longer.
Yeah, a lot of, some people had said he might go to the Raiders, but it seemed like the Bucks were...
And those people and those people would be Cody Schutz and Raymond Parch, as we did our mock draft yesterday. Tyler, thanks for the – I appreciate the shout out there that we had the Raiders. We just thought, hey, they need a linebacker like that, and how great would that be that he could go there. Plus, we didn't want him to be playing for Tampa Bay. Right. That kind of went as scripted. Your thoughts on the draft, on what kind of surprised you and kind of what stood out, so to speak?
Nothing really surprised me, really. I thought it went, I mean, there was some quarterback, there's a quarterback that went a lot higher. Condolences to my good friend, co-worker, and huge Giants friend, James Moran. He wasn't very happy with that pick. I was surprised. I mean, on the Greedy Williams front, I wasn't necessarily surprised that he didn't get picked in the first round. I was surprised that a cornerback didn't go until, like, late 20s. That's what kind of shocked me. I thought one of them would go much higher than that. So I figured out early on that Greedy Williams wasn't going to get drafted because he has a couple of cornerbacks in front of him, and none of them were getting drafted either. So he'll get drafted today.
DBs were not a premium. It was all about line, right? I mean, with the exception of the quarterbacks, it was O-line, D-line, 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 linebacker. It was very front seven and O-line heavy this first round of this draft. And – yeah, I wasn't necessarily surprised about Greedy because once you start seeing it, Tyler Wright, you see all those other linemen go, and I was like, I don't think we're going to get to DBs, even though this is a passing league and you need as many top-notch defensive backs as possible. But everyone put a premium on all those D linemen. I mean, hell, the most players from any school drafted was Mississippi State.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, and that's what they're good at. They have good linemen. So, it was I mean, it's a bummer for Greedy. He made the trip to Nashville, but, I mean, he's going to get drafted pretty early on today, more than likely. So I'm sure he's still enjoying his time with his family. I'm sure he's going to enjoy getting that contract in front of him once that eventually happens. And he'll be playing on Sundays pretty soon here. So I'm not too worried about Greedy Williams. I think that he's going to be okay. I'm really happy for Devin White. I know a lot of people didn't want him to go up against the Saints twice a year, but the fact that he gets to come to Louisiana once a year, the state that – he seems to love so much. I think that's going to be a lot of fun for him. So on a personal level, I'm really happy for Devin.
Highest drafted linebacker in the modern era for LSU. You surprised by that?
No, not at all. Devin White is a monster, and on top of that, he's got a killer personality to boot. I think he probably killed it in interviews, and that probably sold him on a lot of teams. If he wasn't going to Tampa Bay, he was probably going to go somewhere not too far after that. So, yeah, I think we had Mike Tillier on our radio show earlier this week. I think he said he's only the 10th inside linebacker to get drafted in the top five since, like, 1980 or something like that. So, huge accomplishment for him. Butkus Award winner, best linebacker in the country, and now he's going to be playing on Sundays.
But, Tyler, were you disappointed watching the draft last night and to see that Devin, in fact, did not get on stage with his horse, riding his horse on stage to Commissioner Goodell?
I did not. I feel like that would have been a logistical nightmare for everyone in Nashville. Have you seen how many people go to these things? Like, oh, my God. Like, I was looking at those shots. I guess they were on Broadway or whatever that street is. But the number of people at the NFL draft is absolutely insane to me. Just to watch kids get... Some of them go up there, some of them don't. I don't know. Are people going out of their way to go to the NFL draft? That's something kind of wild to me.
Well, right. I feel the same way because for years we always would watch it and it'd be there at Radio City Music Hall, and you'd always get the Jets and the Giants fans, by the way, misstep on the NFL's part, because how great would have been to have it in New York this year when the Giants make that pick. And
that would have been riots.
It's a missed opportunity. But Twitter, by the way, is undefeated. Someone tweeted this out that when Daniel Jones out of Duke got drafted, they tweeted this out. Daniel Jones looks like the actor they'd cast to play Eli Manning in a movie about Peyton Manning's life. And I was just like, Twitter is undefeated, just always.
One of my friends asked if we were sure that if he wasn't one of a secret Manning son.
An illegitimate son.
Black helicopters.
Hey, well, Tyler's got helicopters chasing him around wherever he's at for this bachelor party. I need to know where he's having this bachelor party at. That there's helicopters around. That's
I'm in Orange Beach.
Okay, that can be helicopter esque from time to time.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing. There are like four of them. They just went down the coast.
There's a manhunt going on where Tyler's having a bachelor party. Oh, that's tremendous. Yeah. That's tremendous news. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Day two, rounds two and three. We know Greedy's going to go. Any thought process on what team could be a good fit for him? I know he didn't make any visits, so you can't really kind of read the tea leaves, so to speak, that way. But are there any teams that you think that are be picking early in the second round that are in need of a cornerback that could go after Greedy?
I'm not really sure. Like you said, he didn't do any visits. He didn't really do much at the combine. Like, I have really, he's like the first player in a long time I could think of where I just have like absolutely no idea where he could go because, I mean, everybody needs cornerbacks. It's not like, I mean, like you could always use a cornerback like Greedy Williams. It's not like that he's got a specialized skill set that only a few teams need. And on top of that, like you said, he just hasn't talked to anyone, which isn't a bad thing. It's just a weird thing. And, I just don't know. I have no idea. I mean, if he falls far enough, he could theoretically go to the Saints.
Oh, there's Tyler. There's Tyler throwing that out there. We know Greedy's going to be selected today, Tyler.
Yeah.
What are the chances that you would have to put on two guys that are projected to be mid-round picks? Is there any way possible that, say, Foster Moreau or even Ed Alexander sneaks into the end of the third round today? Or do you think that they're definitely going to be Saturday picks, fourth, fifth-round guys?
I think more likely would probably, this is going to sound weird, but more likely would probably be Foster Moreau. A, because I think his personality probably went a long way in visits. And B, we saw like three or four tight ends go last night, and that was kind of shocking to me as well. So the fact that a lot of tight ends are already going off the board is probably good for Foster. And I think that the fact that he can block and catch is probably going to bode him well as well. So I think if anyone's going to make that jump, it's probably going to be him.
Do you see, obviously, if Foster doesn't get selected today, people are very high on him. He'll be selected on the third day of the draft, as well Ed Alexander. I had Nick Brissett on earlier today, Tyler, and I was impressed with the mindset. You know, I feel like he's already kind of put in his, you know, if he gets drafted, great. If not, he'll make the best of an opportunity as an undrafted free agent. Where do you think Brissett and maybe like someone like John Battle, are they going to be sixth, seventh round guys, or do you see them possibly being undrafted rookie free agents that are going to try to catch on with the team during camp?
I personally would prefer to be a free agent, but I can see them getting drafted. The fact that they play for a school like LSU helps. It's not like a Trey Quinn situation where we weren't really sure what he could do against NFL talent and he falls to the Mr. Irrelevant spot. So I think that both of those guys have a pretty good chance of getting drafted. I've seen Nick Brissett on boards for a while now, so I'd be kind of surprised if he didn't get picked up. But I personally, if I were them at that point, I mean, I would rather just be able to pick whatever team I want to go to. But
because in that regard, you can secure your secure the best spot for you that you think is going to be the best spot for you to be able to keep getting that paycheck. You know,
right.
Yeah.
Right, right. And, if you get drafted in those late rounds, you're just kind of at the mercy of the team that drafts you for a while. So, that being said, though, getting drafted is a big deal, and I think all these guys would love to get drafted. They'd love to say they got drafted. In 10 years, they get to tell their kids they got drafted. I think that plays a bigger factor than a lot of people realize. So, I think it's possible that those guys go drafted or undrafted. Those last two rounds are very wishy-washy. It's kind of you never really know what you're going to get. So that's when teams start taking weird chances and guys who expected to get drafted don't get drafted. It's just one of those weird situations.
Tyler, I appreciate you taking some time out for us. Please be safe out there. I hope you evade the authorities that are obviously looking for you and the rest of your bachelor party friends. And I hope you survive the weekend. And if you're not in jail, or even if you are, you can make your last phone call and call us next week.
Sounds good.
Tyler Nunez. having a good time with us. He's always a good sport. That's why I love Tyler so much.
That's funny.
Tyler Nunez, Tiger Rag.
Apparently, Tyler Nunez saying that the final few rounds of the NFL draft are like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
We'll throw this out here, though, for you. Nick Brissett did visit with the New Orleans Saints. It's one of the four teams he visited with. Took visits with after the combine. How would you feel about that?
I'm down to clown, especially with the Saints. Barry talked about it a little bit, their history of drafting well with the undrafted free agent guys.
Yeah.
And especially in that position at running back. Deuce McAllister, well, I don't know about the Deuce, but Pierre Thomas for sure.
Yeah.
Was an undrafted guy. I mean, I think the Saints, and of course, then any LSU guy on the Saints, I'm down for that.
LSU fans, I know you're greedy Williams, that's not going to happen. But what if the Saints somehow find a way to get Foster Moreau and Nick Brissett?
Ooh. Be a good day.
Oh, that'd be a good weekend.
It would sort of kind of rival the Avengers, almost.
almost.
Let me reiterate, almost.
This man's been counting down the days since Infinity War. We'll wrap up this terrific edition of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game after this break. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live as always from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium. Just a little programming reminder. Coming up next, Dan Patrick Show, followed by the Jim Rome Show. Jordy Holberg Show from 2 to 4 today will be guest host once again by Jeff Horchek, our good friend from KLFY, will be subbing in this afternoon. Then it'll be Bumper to Bumper Sports. That's right, B2BS on the road, 4 to 5:30, live from Rufino's. Our good brother, Ben Love, will be there with Ruffin. Make sure to check that out. He's going to lead you into pregame, LSU-Bama in Tuscaloosa, baseball. Pregame show, 5:30, first pitch, 6 o'clock. Also, Astros versus Indians. Game 2 of that series can be heard on our sister station, KVOL, The Rewind, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM Lafayette, or 104.1 in Lake Charles. Cody.
Raymond.
I feel like there's something going on. Like, for me, I went to Festival International for the first time on Wednesday. Had a terrific time.
Awesome.
Had myself a crawfish corn dog, which was
That sounds good, yeah.
Amazing.
That sounds really good.
Got to see Steve Riley and the Mamou Playboys.
Awesome.
Got to see a little Keith Frank before we went home.
Casanova.
Oh, yeah. So we had a nice time. Also going on, you have Raging Cajuns baseball
at
home.
That's a thing.
You also have Raging Cajuns softball, senior weekend for them.
Top 10 team.
Top 10 team in the country right here at Lamson Park in Lafayette.
And also a thing.
Also, there's also the Angola Prison Rodeo, which your boy will be attending for the first time on Saturday. So there's a lot going on this weekend, Raymond. So what will you be doing? You'll be doing any of those four things?
I will not, because, Raymond, there's one thing you need to know, and that is that we are...
We're in the end game now.
We're in the end game now, Raymond.
We're in the end game now.
It is time. No more waiting. The wait is over. Infinity War, a year ago. One of the greatest pieces of American cinema, and it has led to this. 11 years of filmmaking. Marvel Cinematic Universe, the Infinity War saga, it comes to a culmination this weekend. The film is out nationwide right now. I cannot wait. My blood is boiling. My inner superhero is trying to burst out of me. I cannot wait. Tomorrow, oh yes, tomorrow, Endgame will be in my future. That was all off the cuff. You'd swear I wrote that down. Nope.
I commend you for going on opening weekend to the billion-dollar movie.
Yes, the largest movie opening probably of all time.
Of all time. I will pass. Not because I don't love the Marvel movies. I do.
You hate people.
I hate people being loud in the movie theater. I'm the cranky old man. I'm going to be 41 this year. I don't have time for it. I'm already like 65 years old. I'm going to be such a great old man. I can't wait. Y'all have a great and safe weekend out there, regardless of what you're doing. We'll talk to you guys on Monday here on 103.7 The Game.